Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, June 23rd, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week and a great weekend. Got a lot to talk about in today's show, so let's go through topics and jump into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for Action Wrestling, My Own Prison, TWE, Road to Perdition, Josh Barnett's Bloodsport Bushido, AIW Shook Ones, Revolver, Cage of Horrors, MLW, Anniversary 24, NXT Level Up, and we'll wrap up today's show with some Ring of Honor Honor Club spoilers. I'll make sure to put the timestamps there in the description below the audio here on FightfulSelect.com if you want to remain spoiler-free, but it will be at the end of the show, so I'll give you a heads up. If you want to turn the show off at that point, go for it. If you want the spoilers, feel free to stick around. So once again, a bunch of results for Action, TWE, Bloodsport, AIW, Revolver, MLW, NXT Level Up, and we'll wrap up with ROH spoilers. So let's start off the show today. Oh, by the way, just a little side note. Depending on time, I may throw some thoughts out there for previewing Forbidden Door, but I'm on the fence about that because I'm going to try to do the Weekender on Sunday before Forbidden Door next weekend. So the plan as of now is to do the predictions for Forbidden Door next week, but depending on time, I may talk a little Forbidden Door today's episode as well. But as I said, I'm hoping to do next week's episode with, you know, kind of last-minute predictions before that show happens. So hopefully Sunday afternoon, I'll be doing the show next week. There's always a chance it'll be on Monday, depending on the schedule and other stuff going on, but that's the plan, at least as of right now. So if you hear some Forbidden Door predictions on the show, that's what's going on there. And if you don't, we're going to save them until next week. Also, I'll be giving thoughts on Forbidden Door, predictions for that, and of course, I'll be talking the kind of fallout of that over the next couple weeks over on the Fightful week, or sorry, not on the Weekender, you're listening to the Weekender, over on the Spotlight on Fightful. That's on the YouTube main channel. So every Thursday morning, myself and Jeremy Lambert over on the Spotlight on Fightful, that's where you'll hear most of my thoughts on, AEW versus New Japan, or AEW and New Japan, I should say. It's not really a versus show, but kind of is, kind of isn't. AEW and New Japan's Forbidden Door. We'll be talking a lot about that over the coming weeks on this platform and over on the Spotlight. So some notes there for y'all before we get started. And that all said, let's jump right into the first set of topics and results. We're going to start off with Action Wrestling's My Own Prison. This show took place in Tyrone, Georgia. This was on the 21st, so on Friday night at the time of this recording, this being Sunday afternoon that I'm recording the show. So we had this on June 21st. This is available on independentwrestling.tv. Use code FIGHTTALK. That's FIGHTTALK. All is one word, no spaces. If you put code FIGHTTALK in the promo spot on IWTV.live or independentwrestling.tv, then it just lets the platform know that I sent you their way. And I appreciate everyone who does that. So that said, let's get into the results. First match we had was Bobby Flacco over Mr. Danger. Both these guys, students of AR Fox, and two guys that are killing it everywhere they're at right now. Bobby Flacco, especially as far as like Action Wrestling, he's been one of the most consistently over kind of top guys as far as crowd reactions and people who are really, really behind in Action Wrestling, who, as I said, consistently, on the pretty much every Action Wrestling show, Bob's here, if you know. Mr. Danger, also a guy from that same school who is really getting a lot of eyes on him right now for good reason. Very innovative. Two really exciting guys right here, Bobby Flacco and Mr. Danger. The finish of this match was Flacco hitting a super Cody cutter off the top rope, followed up by a top rope double stomp onto Danger for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Alex Kane over Matt Sells. The finish of this one saw Casey Owens try to get involved, got up on the ring apron, got palm striked off the ring apron by Matt Sells. But as this is happening with the distraction, Alex Kane comes up behind Matt Sells, hit him with a dragon suplex, and pins him to get the victory. After that, we had Darian Benston over Alexander Lev. The finish here was similar to the first match, as far as like the setup for the finish, where Hyder actually gets up on the ring apron this time, very similar to how Casey Owens did in the previous match, only this time it backfires, and Lev run towards Hyder, gets sidestepped by Benston and gets he basically, like, they run into one another, knocks him off the ring apron, and that leads right into a jackknife pin by Benston to get the 1-2-3. After the match, Hyder tries to get in the ring, and Benson hits him with his running, running elbow. I always call it the running Danielson elbow or the running Danielson forearm. It's like a mixture between an elbow and a clothesline. Y'all know what I mean. You've seen Danielson do it 1,000 times. But Benson has made it his own, and he always gets some good air with that thing. I like that he uses it as his finish. And he's very over. I mean, Darien, for people who might not know, Darien is getting more and more of a push in action wrestling, but over in TWE, which we're actually going to talk about in the next set of results, longtime champion there, and is a guy who, it's one of those things with them being kind of like sister promotions, TWE in action. You know, that of course means, a lot of the same fans attend a lot of the same shows, and a lot of the same wrestlers may get a lot of pushes in the same companies, because it's like he's killing it in TWE. Let's bring him over to action, see how he does there, and he's doing very, very well. It's very nice to see, because a lot of talent there. After that, we had Braden Toon over Damian Tangra. Two guys, we had Braden Toon on the spotlight not too long ago, the former New South champion. Super innovative. I mean, so is Damian Tangra. I've always liked Tangra's work, and it's good to see more of him, because I don't see him nearly as often as I see a lot of the people that we're going to cover on the show here on the Weekender. But Tangra has always been super talented, and I really remember, his team, especially with Alex Kane, and they would do shows at SUP, and really all over the place, but like mainly in the Southeast. I always kind of linked him with Alex Kane, either as a tag team or as opponents. And both guys, as I said, very, very innovative. Braden Toon can do everything. Damian Tangra can do everything too, but really, especially like his technical ability and the way he can innovate within that technical ability, if that makes sense. Stylistically, these two work really well with one another, but they're also the kind of guys who have good matches with everybody. So it makes sense they'd have good matches with one another, which they did. The finish here was Braden Toon basically doing a backflip over to get behind Damian Tangra, and then hits an air raid crash for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the Action Tag Team Championships on the line. The Good Hand, the team of Kevin Ryan and Shug D, defend and retain their titles over the Buff and Fluff Connection, the team of Cody Fluffman and Sean Legacy. The best way I can describe this is the Good Hand is, there's like all the members of the Good Hand are like on the outside, and there's kind of chaos going on where the referee can't really keep control of everything going on inside and outside the ring. Sean Legacy gets thrown off the top rope, and Kevin Ryan, the camera kind of missed it, but I think he basically hit like a running Shining Wizard to the back of the head, like the boom, like Adam Cole. I believe that's what he did for the 1-2-3. So Kevin Ryan pins Cody Fluffman, and the Good Hand retains the tag titles. After that, we had the Action Wrestling Championship on the line. Manders defends and retains over Tyler Stevens, a.k.a. The Wall. If you've never seen Stevens, very tall guy, very large dude, and he's a nice guy as well. I've actually talked to him a few different places, but I've never interviewed him, which is kind of weird to say. Like, I've spoken to him, but like the timing just wasn't right as far as like getting audio for the interview at the time we were talking. He's a guy, though, I'd be interested in having on the spotlight sometime soon. I talked to him at Deep South. I've talked to him at Championship District Wrestling. So he's a guy who's been around, and I know he's been getting a lot of looks lately in Action Wrestling. Had a good match here with Manders, the reigning defending champion. The finish here was The Wall going for a big boot, and Manders basically avoids it by doing a somersault under his leg. So like he ducks the big boot with a somersault and follows up with a running lariat for the 3 count. And the main event of the show, we had the IWTV Independent Wrestling World Championship on the line in a steel cage match. Cruel defends and retains over Adam Priest. This match, I cannot do justice by trying to describe it. If y'all know the history between Cruel and Priest, I mean, you know the history if you've been listening to The Weekender, because we've been covering it. It's spanned over multiple companies over the span of like multiple years. And the two of these guys have actual personal history with one another that dates back even farther than that. So there's a lot on the line in this match, and this was also the first ever steel cage match in the history of Action Wrestling. So a big bar to set for that company, because the bar is already high for that company being one of the best independent wrestling promotions in the world, in my opinion. So just a few things that wind up happening in this match that were pretty nuts. At one point, Adam Priest lights a branding iron on fire, which he's known to do when, you know, he's done this a few times before in the past. So it's kind of like a go-to signature move of Adam Priest in like these deathmatch or hardcore type scenarios. So Adam Priest has a flaming branding iron and like does it to the face of Cruel and then hits him with a DDT, which is his finishing move, which I have said 1,000 times. I love that Adam Priest's finisher is just a simple standard DDT. And it's very over, and people rarely ever kick out of that thing. But of course, Cruel did, because he is completely unbeatable right now. So Cruel kicks out of that. The match goes on a little bit longer. Eventually, Cruel hits a choke slam, followed up by a scorched earth onto Adam Priest, and he winds up winning the match. I don't know what's next for Priest, and I think we'll actually talk about him a little bit more with some more of these results during the show. But Priest kind of seemed to like give his send-off to the action crowd on social media. He's a 2-time Action Wrestling champion, I think the first person to do that. And it's an interesting position to be in, because we'll talk about him because he's been popping up in MLW a little bit, and he's done a little bit of Ring of Honor, and so. And I also saw Cruel put a tweet out there that kind of implied, like, you know, I'll see you down the line kind of thing. Priest was basically saying he'll see, you know, the Action Wrestling crowd, you know, sometime down the line, like, see you when I see you. So, I don't know. I guess I could do some digging and try to find out, but I don't know. We'll see how much I want to pry into this, but my spidey senses are tingling as far as, like, what is the future looking like for Adam Priest? Like, is he signing somewhere? I could probably find out pretty fast, but well, either way, we'll leave that on hold for now. I just don't be surprised if there's some sort of news that comes out in the near future about Adam Priest going somewhere. But I don't know if that's MLW. I don't know if that's AEW/Ring of Honor. I don't know if that's WWE/NXT. Like, I have no idea, because I honestly have not looked into it. But everyone has known for the longest time that Adam Priest is one of the best in-ring workers in the world, whether on an independent level or, you know, on television. So whether he stays on the independent scene and continues to kill it as a top guy everywhere he goes, or if he winds up, you know, on a bigger platform of any kind, I am an Adam Priest fan. So once again, any style, Adam Priest, hope the future is bright for him. I'm sure it is. And Cruel is still the IWTV Independent Wrestling World Champion. The dude is totally unbeatable. And we'll talk a little bit more about Cruel later in the show as well. But that, once again, is Action Wrestling's My Own Prison. It's available over on independentwrestling.tv. Speaking of independentwrestling.tv, the next set of results we got is for TWE. This is TWE Road to Perdition. And this was from Red Bank, Tennessee, basically Chattanooga, Tennessee. And this was from the TWE Arena, which has become a famous venue in independent wrestling over recent years. Not just TWE running there. A lot of like SCI shows have been there. Action Wrestling has been there. ICW and HB, rather, has been there. And so on and so forth. So, and also, they did the entire Southeast First Uncharted Territory season there as well, of course. This show is, once again, Road to Perdition, and this is from the 22nd. So this show happened last night at the time of this recording, on June 22nd. These are the results. The show actually started off with Dylan Hales, who is the commentator for TWE, also, the man backstage, a part of the team backstage for TWE that, you know, puts the show together, books the show, writes the show, so on and so forth. Dylan, a massive part of that whole process. And he basically sets the show up as far as like the main event, which I'll get to. And there's been stuff between himself and Jameson Shook, the two of them in the ring together, leading to Jameson's match, the first match of the night, which is Jameson Shook defeating Hippie John. The finish of this one was, I think it was a one-winged angel, because my feed froze. Like, Shook had John up on his shoulders in like an electric chair, and the thing just froze. Like, I could hear the audio, but the picture froze, and then all I saw was him getting pinned. So like I think it was like a one-winged angel type move. Sorry, Jameson, couldn't see it. But if you want to see a sweet Jameson Shook moment from recent memory, check out the match between Jameson and Brett Eisen from KOBK One More. He took a gnarly vertebraker, a.k.a. cop killer, through a door onto basically gravel. It was an outdoor show, so, I mean, just brutal finish, great match. Moving on, we had a tag team match. Sigrid, Daughter of Pyr, and Will Steele defeat Damon Stryker and Jake Murphy. The finish of this one, I'll try to do my best to describe. So Damon Stryker accidentally super kicks Jake Murphy off the ring apron, and then Damon turns around and gets pounced by Sigrid, and mid-air, Will hits a spear. So, like, Sigrid hits a pounce onto Damon, Will with a spear, 1, 2, 3. Great finish there. Looked awesome. After that, we had Hunter Drake over Anakin Murphy. Finish here was Hunter popping Anakin up into the air, head first down into an exposed corner. The turnbuckle was removed, so there was an exposed steel turnbuckle that he went head first into, and Hunter then does a jackknife pin, gets the 1-2-3 Hunter Drake over Anakin Murphy. After that, we had the Gig City title on the line. Eden Monroe defends and retains over Luminary. The finish here was Luminary going for a belly-to-back suplex, and Eden falls right on top of them, holds them down, 1-2-3. Eden retains the Gig City title. After that, we had the ADS, the Akuto Death Society, the team of Kevin Ryan and Chris Kronk. They defeat Goons of Scenic City, the team of Lizzie and Peyton Blair. The finish here was... So, I'm going to do my best on this one to try to describe the finish. It was a sweet double-team finisher. So, I wrote down old-school assisted double-team Falcon Arrow, which is going to sound impossible to follow. Basically, what happens is Chris Kronk puts Peyton Blair up in a vertical suplex position, and while he's holding Blair there, Kevin Ryan grabs Blair's legs and does the tightrope walk, like the old school walk on the top rope, and then throws Blair's legs as Kronk turns it into a Falcon Arrow. So it was a double team old school Falcon Arrow for the three count. I'm sure they have a name for that move, or if they don't, they need to come up with one, because it's a sweet move. After that, we had Braden Toon over Casey Owens. This was a great match. Both these guys can really go. We've talked about Braden Toon a lot on this show in the spotlight, recently. But Casey Owens, we've talked about a little bit when it comes to the good hand and stuff in action wrestling, and of course comes from TWE, but doesn't get enough credit and is somebody to really keep your eyes on. These two guys really meshed really well, in my opinion, in this one. The finish here was, I don't know what Braden calls this move, but Braden hits a top rope swanton bomb and then follows up with a double underhook power bomb, which is what I actually wrote down. And then Dylan Hales on commentary, I think, called it a double underhook powerbomb variation. So I was like, okay, cool. I called it what you called it. Basically, he needs to... Some of these moves, they need to come up with finishing names for. And some of them probably do have finishing names for it, and they just hasn't been relayed or remembered by commentary or by myself. You know what I mean? So not a huge deal, but it's one of those things where, it's a sweet move. I wish you knew the name of it. But it was a double underhook powerbomb, but, there was a twist to it because of the way that Braden came down a little different with it. So it wasn't just your standard double underhook powerbomb. There was a variation aspect to it. Braden, a very innovative dude, and this was a great match. In the main event of the show, we had an 8-person tag match. Team KOBK, which was Brett Eisen, Hardway Heater, Lutha X, and Sean Campbell, and they had Moe's on the outside, who is normally a commentator for TWE and was commentating the rest of the show. But due to, bias and, of course, the fact that it's a part of KOBK, he was involved in this match. They defeated the Coven of the Goat, the team of Azrael, Jaden Newman, Nathan Mowry, and Tank. The finish of this one was basically what winds up happening is like there's just chaos all around the ring, like between KOBK and Coven of the Goat. This has been a long time, long going feud between these two factions that really has reached a boiling point during this match. As this is all happening around the ring, Bret Eisen gets a chloroform rag and shoves it in the face of Tank. So essentially, the leaders of the two groups, Tank being the leader of the Coven of the Goat and Bret Eisen being the leader of KOBK, Bret Eisen chloroforms Tank and then puts him in a rear naked choke. And the referee grabs Tank's arm, checks for him, does the three, checks on it three times, the arm falls three times, and the referee makes the decision to call off the match. So, due to referee's decision via technical submission, KOBK defeats Coven of the Goat. And then after the match, things get even more crazy. This match itself was nuts, by the way, just already. I mean, I'm not doing it justice by any stretch of the imagination by describing the finish. Y'all should definitely check the show out and check these matches out for yourselves. But this was a wild match, a brutal match, and a match that lived up to the expectations of the feud KOBK and Coven have had with one another. But afterwards, the ante gets, pushed up even more because after the match, KOBK attacks everybody. Moes comes into the ring with a bundle of light tubes, hits Tank with it. I mean, Brett's hitting people with chairs. There's people getting their foreheads, shaved down with barbed wire. This was a brutal attack. And it's all capped off when Sean Campbell literally just lights Nathan Mowry on fire. Just straight up lights him on fire in the middle of the ring. And then KOBK stands tall as the show ends. This was awesome. This was awesome. I love the finish. I love this storyline. And I'm obviously incredibly biased. I've been following a lot of these people, the people that are part of KOBK. Moes has been on the spotlight more than any other guest. I've been covering Jaden Newman's career since he was a literal teenager. It's really cool to see how far so many of these performers have come over the years. I mean, Bret Eisen is the best champion in the history of SupGraps in Nashville, and that was the company that like really reinvigorated my love for wrestling years and years ago, especially on an independent level. And so like Bret and this whole group and everybody involved in this, Tank, a legend, absolute legend, especially in the Southeast, but for the whole deathmatch scene, just really cool to see this whole feud. And it's going to continue, obviously, based on what we saw on this show, but KOBK with the major upper hand at the end of this TWE Road to Perdition. So once again, that's available over on IWTV. Moving on, got results for Josh Barnett's Bloodsport Bushido. This show took place technically yesterday on June 22nd, but it was like an overnight show because it happened in Japan. But it's available over on Triller TV, but not as a part of the Triller TV Plus package. It is a standalone pay-per-view. So from that sense, as a fan, a little frustrating because I pay for Triller TV Plus, obviously, and I always talk about how you get so much involved or included with the Triller TV Plus package, which is true. You get a massive bang for your buck over there. This is not an advertisement. I'm not told to tell you that. I'm not sponsored or endorsed by them. I'm just telling you, it is a damn good deal for the amount of stuff you get on that platform. But there are, of course, still standalone pay-per-views like AEW and New Japan's Forbidden Door, for instance. You can buy that on Triller TV Plus. It's a standalone pay-per-view. But the reason it's frustrating for Bloodsport to be a standalone is because we're used to it being a GCW event, and the GCW shows are included with Triller TV Plus. But because this was promoted by Josh Barnett outside of GCW, it was a standalone pay-per-view. So that's really the only complaint I would have about it, because the actual show was awesome. Like, I love this from top to bottom, considering I'm a diehard, lifelong fan of mixed martial arts, just like I am professional wrestling. So this is my two worlds coming together and overlapping in a way that I'm always going to enjoy and appreciate. Really, the only thing you could do to make this more enjoyable for me, like the only other like hobby or passion I have that's to the level of professional wrestling and MMA is the Minnesota Vikings. So really, the only thing that can make this better is they could have somehow incorporated the Minnesota Vikings into this show, and that just wasn't going to be a possibility. So otherwise, this is really the best of the best of every of my worlds, except for, once again, having to pay for the pay-per-view instead of getting it as a part of the package for Triller TV Plus. But hey, I'm not going to keep talking about that. I just saw that was a common complaint, because there was a lot of people that were surprised it wasn't included. But that said, it's actually really similar to something that happened to me actually today. I'm just putting this together. This happened to me with Bloodsport and also with this other thing that I'm going to tell you about. So I am a member, like a monthly member for my for AMC, for the movie theaters. And I pay like, it's like $20 a month or something like that. And I can see up to 3 movies a week. I rarely ever take advantage of it to that level. But, you know, I usually go at least once or twice a month. And, you know, with how expensive movies have gotten with like the Dolby and, you know, everything, the Dolby, the IMAX, you know, everything is just more expensive to the point where like I go often enough that it makes sense just to have the subscription or the whatever you call it, the membership. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because later today at AMC, there's 2 showings for South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. There's a 25th anniversary showing of the movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I've seen it 1,000 times, but I was like, oh, they're going to be showing this in theaters? This is awesome. So I went to go get a ticket for it for later today, and it isn't included in my package. And I was like, wait, so I'm able to go see like $60 worth of movies a week in Dolby or IMAX, but I can't go see a movie that came out 25 years ago that I've seen literally 100 times as a part of my package. And that's kind of how it felt like with, like, you know, the complaints from myself and from the fan base when, you know, Bloodsport wasn't a part of this package. You know, it just reminded me of that. Like, literally earlier today, before I started recording this, I was going to get tickets to go to AMC later to see South Park. And now I'm not going to do it because I'm like, I'm not going to pay $18 or whatever it is to see a movie I've seen 100 times. But if it was a part of my package, I would have went up there and seen it. And the movie theater would have made a little money off of me because I would have bought popcorn and all that, you know, overpriced food and all that BS, all those snacks and stuff. So I guess they wind up losing in the end, whatever. All right, we'll move on. Let's talk about Bloodsport. These are the results. Show started off with Abe over Yuizuka. The finish of this was a kind of like a, I think it was a knee bar, but it could have been maybe with a combination of an ankle lock in there, but basically like a knee bar ankle lock for the tap out submission win. After that, we had Hideki Suzuki over Hikaru Sata. The finish of this one, oh, this was a first round match in the Bloodsport Bushido tournament as well. The finish of this one was a crossface for the submission win, tap out victory for Suzuki to advance. After that, we had another first round match where Eric Hammer defeats Nomura. This one was a knockout victory. The finish was a straight up power bomb. Like, you know, it's funny because some of these moves, like because of the rule set and like the work shoot style and everything, you do still see some professional wrestling moves, but they will sell the professional wrestling moves as if like there's a lot more consequence to them, if that makes sense. Like if you get powerbombed in this setting, you're probably going to be knocked out, as you'll hear more and more throughout some of these results. So just kind of keep that in mind. So powerbomb for the TKO win. Eric Hammer advances over Nomura. After that, we had Konami over Fukuda. The finish of this one was an Achilles lock for the submission win for the tap out. After that, we had Funaki over Davey Boy Smith Jr. This was a great finish. I loved the finish of this one. It was so simple, and I wish we saw this more in like actual pro wrestling matches. But basically, all that happens is Davey Boy Jr. is going for a sharpshooter, and Funaki, like during the turnover, like when Davey Boy, because obviously to do the sharpshooter, you put your leg through both of the legs of your opponent and you cross their legs up, then try to turn them over. And the reason you never see this happen in an actual fight, for one, it'd be almost impossible to get somebody to tap out due to the pain of that move to begin with in a pro MMA setting. Like it'd just be super unlikely someone could actually pull off a sharpshooter. Now there have been actual Boston Crabs and stuff in MMA that have actually worked, but at like a really low level. You really never see it in the UFC. But my point is, I don't want to get you sidetracked, but my point is when you put your leg through someone else's legs like that, you're literally putting yourself in a position to get knee barred or ankle locked. And ankle lock in MMA is a bit different than what you're used to seeing when you think ankle lock, like Kurt Angle or Ken Shamrock, when you're like behind someone with like holding their ankle while they're trying to like get away. An ankle lock in MMA also can be from like a knee bar position where you're grabbing, you have like their ankle under your, like under your armpit, and you're pulling it. Like it looks like you're pulling their leg, but you're actually pulling their ankle, or a combination of both, like the finish in the first match with Abe. That said, the reason I thought this was so awesome was because Davey Boy is trying to turn over Funaki in a sharpshooter, and Funaki has a leg lock. So he just grabs the leg of Davey Boy and applies the pressure, and Davey Boy basically put himself in the submission hold, it doesn't make Davey Boy look stupid, really, because like he was trying to go for a sharpshooter, which, you know, he's done 1,000 times, and it is a finishing move, and it's one of the best finishing submission holds in professional wrestling history. Especially when Sting did it, you know, shout out to Sting and the Scorpion Deathlock, my favorite, you know, variation of the hold. But, you know, I thought this was awesome. This was so smart how they did this. Like, Davey Boy was going for his submission hold, but he basically put himself into Funaki's submission, and Funaki took advantage of it. Great stuff. After that, we had Quentin Rampage Jackson over Hideki Sakai. The finish of this one, also a bit pro wrestling, but Rampage Jackson is a rare exception to where, like, if people know Rampage's history, there's a famous fight where it was him versus Ricardo Arona from Pride. I mean, this is years and years and years ago, early 2000s. And when Arona had him in like a triangle choke from the bottom, Rampage picked him up in the air and actually powerbombed him and knocked him out. So in an actual legitimate MMA fight, people can have their takes on, you know, Pride FC and whether or not it was, you know, whether or not there was fights being fixed and steroids being distributed and Yakuza involvement, all this stuff. All those things actually are true and did happen as well. But there were a lot of legitimate fights that happened in Pride too. And that was one of the most iconic moments, honestly, in MMA history. So Rampage is known to actually be able to execute these type of things in professional MMA fights. The reason I say this is because the finish of this one is Rampage hitting a scoop slam onto Hideki and then getting on top of him and just hitting him with a flurry of ground and pound, like punches to the head on the ground. And then he starts doing the head stomps, which is very well known, especially for Pride FC. Rampage is known mainly for his run in Pride FC and in the UFC. And in Pride, you're allowed to, when someone's on the ground, you're allowed to actually soccer kick them. Like, you can stomp their head, you can kick their head, like, there's no limits as far as, like, you couldn't see that in the UFC, but in Pride it was allowed. And a lot of Japanese MMA promotions to this day still allow head stomps and stuff like that. And Rampage stomps over and over and over. The referee has to jump in there and stop the match. And Rampage wins by, I guess, technical submission due to head stomps. And by the way, I'll also say Rampage Jackson, I have a bit of a love-hate history with Rampage, because Rampage Jackson blocked me on Twitter like over a decade ago. I gave him a compliment that he completely misunderstood, and he blocked me. And I hate that, because I've always been such a big Rampage fan of his fighting. For people who don't know the Rampage name and everything, the character, when he was in Pride, he used to come out in Japan for like these Saitama Super Arena shows and stuff, and he would come out in like the wolf mask, like from the Rampage video game, with like this giant chain around his neck. And if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure they marketed him like he was homeless and stuff, which he wasn't, but that was like the gimmick. And he would come out there in Japan and just throw down. I mean, he beat Chuck Liddell in Japan when Chuck Liddell was, you know, the man over in the UFC, and then he wound up being Chuck Liddell in the UFC when he came over. I mean, it's very well documented, the career of Rampage. I got mad respect for the dude, and I wish he wouldn't have blocked me all those years ago, because it was a complete misunderstanding. Basically, what I did, just so people know, there was a UFC fight. This is going to get confusing, but this is so many years ago. Quentin Jackson Rampage was supposed to fight, I believe at the time it was Maldonado, and Rampage had already fought in Pride, he had already fought in UFC, and at the time he was contracted to Bellator, but there was something where like he was going to be able to get out of his Bellator contract, and he was going to come fight for the UFC again. So the UFC started promoting the return of Rampage and his fight with Maldonado. And some weird stuff started happening in the lead up to the fight where Bellator like started to block Rampage from coming over and this and that. So ultimately what winds up happening, at least up to this point, is Rampage is told, and everyone's told, oh, Rampage actually isn't on the pay-per-view. Like we can't actually book him. We're dealing with his contract stuff with Bellator. So they have to pull the Rampage fight. I go on social media and I'm like, oh, this sucks because I don't want to buy the pay-per-view anymore. The only reason I wanted to buy this pay-per-view is to see Rampage fight. And he took that the wrong way, misunderstood it. And the funniest thing about all this is like a few days later, they got the contract thing figured out and Rampage wound up actually fighting on that pay-per-view and winning. Like so it's like my tweet didn't wind up mattering at all because he wound up fighting. And the tweet initially the whole time was about, man, I'm such a Rampage fan. Like, it was all about, I'm a fan of yours. I got your back. I don't even want this pay-per-view if you're not fighting on it. But I think he took it as like, I'm not buying this pay-per-view because of Rampage. Like, it was a total misunderstanding. And I also want to give him his credit. He's in a lot better shape during this show than the last time I saw him. He gained a ton of weight and was fighting at heavyweight in recent years. Looked like, you know, I mean, he was just so much bigger than he used to be. I don't know how else to put it. He really ballooned up, and he looks like he's in a way better shape now since the last time I saw him, so that's really good to see, too. So, hey, Rampage Jackson, if you hear this, or if anybody who knows Rampage hears this, I've been a fan. I'm an OG fan. I'm still a fan. I love that you're involved more with pro wrestling again, because he's dipped in and out of the pro wrestling world over the years, whether it's, you know, TNA and stuff like that. Man. It was cool to see. This was cool to see. And in a setting like Bloodsport is perfect for Rampage. He killed it in this. After that, we had Sakuraba, who is also a legitimate pioneer of mixed martial arts, over Santino Marella. It's good to see Santino in a setting like this, by the way. Like, when it isn't all comedy and this kind of stuff. Like, because he does have a legitimate judo background. And, like, he's a martial artist. So I like this setting. Sakuraba defeats Santino Marella. The finish of this one was a Kimura for the submission for the tap out. After that, we had Minoru Suzuki, another legitimate legend in mixed martial arts. He defeats Timothy Thatcher. This one was a Gotch-style pile driver for the technical knockout. Once again, goes to my point of when you have actual pro wrestling moves happening during these matches, or during these fights, I should really say, then, you know, just a lot more weight to them. Like, I know Suzuki uses that as a finish usually anyways in pro wrestling, but normally you obviously pin someone afterwards. This was an immediate knockout. After that, we had the tournament finals for the Bloodsport Bushido tournament. Hideki Suzuki defeats Eric Hammer. The finish of this one was a toe hold for the tap out. Suzuki wins the tournament with by submission. And the main event of the show, we had John Moxley defeating Josh Barnett, avenges his Bloodsport loss to Barnett. And this was great stuff. Moxley was bleeding profusely during this one. And you just know Mox just loves this so much. Like, this is his world. You know, I feel like he feels so at home doing these kind of shows in front of these crowds. I mean, he even grabs the microphone and, you know, basically says as much after the match as well. The finish of this one, once again, to my point with the pro wrestling moves, John Moxley hits a tiger driver and then a double stomp, which I've never seen Moxley do a double stomp, I don't think, but he just did like a jumping double stomp to the chest of Barnett, and then just does ground and pound, like elbows and hammer fists, until the referee jumps in and stops it. So John Moxley, rather, gets a huge win over Josh Barnett, but Josh Barnett, as I mentioned, it is Josh Barnett's blood sport. He did have a previous win over Moxley. He also is a pioneer of MMA. If you didn't know, Josh Barnett is, I don't know if he still is to this day, but when he won the title, and still maybe to this day, he was the youngest ever UFC heavyweight champion. Y'all can do your research as far as like why he had to relinquish the title and stuff when he did. But that said, Moxley with the win over Barnett, And yeah, this was a great show. As I said, the only thing I could say against it is I wish it was a part of the Trailer TV Plus package, but it is what it is. This was a great show, and I think it's worth the money on the pay-per-view, by the way, just for what it's worth. If you're into this kind of stuff, I think you should check the show out. Moving on, we have results for AIW Shook Ones. This show took place out of Akron, Ohio. This is from Absolute Intense Wrestling. This was from last night on June 22nd. This was a part of the Trailer TV Plus package, and these are the results. Show started off with a six-way match where Mikey Montgomery defeated Dex Royal, Shelby Wilder, Austin James, Tyson Riggs, and Vic Vice. The finish of this one was Mikey Montgomery hitting the Blu-ray driver, which is his version of like a jumping Death Valley driver, into a ladder that was up against the corner. So like a turnbuckle ladder, Blu-ray driver, 1, 2, 3. Mikey Montgomery continues to rise the ranks. As we've seen, you know, his former Bitcoin Boys tag team partner, Eric Taylor, has rose the ranks and become a champion, a singles champion in AIW. Mikey Montgomery right on his heels with a big win in the scramble. And we saw him later on in the show, too. There was a lot that happened in the steel cage match at the end of the show that involved a lot of the talent. After that, we had a pure rules match where Dominic Greene defeats Shaw Mason. The finish here was not very pure rules-ish. Dominic Greene basically kicks Mason off of him, and Mason kind of like bumps into the referee. And when Mason turns around, Greene grabs him and like kind of like throws him neck first into the middle rope, bounces off, and Greene does a schoolboy roll up with a deep pin, 1, 2, 3. So Greene goes against kind of the pureness of the rules and cheats to win to get the pinfall victory over Shaw Mason. After that, we had a four-way match where Zaya Brookside defeats Jocelyn Navarro, Katie Arquette, and Gabby Forza. The finish of this one was Zaya throwing Navarro off the top rope onto Arquette and Forza, and then pinning Navarro for the 1, 2, 3. After that, we had members only, the team of Calvin G. Lewis and Malcolm Cambridge. They defeat tag team, the team of Joshua Bishop and Filthy Tom Lawler. Josh Bishop cut his hair, sporting more of a short hair look now, but still rocking the bleach blonde. I like that Bishop's changing his look up a little bit. Although I do think he's at peak when he's got like the long curly hair, but I mean, nonetheless, y'all know Josh Bishop's my boy. Won nothing but success for him and for Filthy Tom. And this was pretty nuts because of what happened at the end of this one. So basically, this was all to set up something bigger. The finish here was Bishop and Lawler basically have Cambridge and Lewis dead to rights. They've got them both set up for, I think Bishop's about to hit a Bishop bomb. Lawler might have a power bomb set up. Like, they're both ready to hit their finishes and get out of there. And Karen Jarrett walks out onto the entrance ramp holding a Jeff Jarrett guitar and distracts everybody. And while this distractions happen, members only do double schoolboy roll-ups and get double pins on Bishop and Lawler to get the wins. Right after this happens, Jeff Jarrett attacks Bishop and Lawler with a chair and then hits the referee over the head with a guitar. And this is all setting up, you know, more between Bishop, Lawler, and Jarrett and members only, the Jarretts and members only. After that, we had a four-way match where Derek Dillinger defeated Max Caster, Trey Lamar, and Tyler Jordan. The finish of this one was Katie Arquette getting in the ring, and basically, she causes the distraction so that Derek Dillinger can hit a low blow onto Max Caster and then pin him with a schoolboy roll-up for the 1-2-3. After that, we had an eight-man tag team match where Kaplan, Marino Tenaglia, and Philly Collins of PME and Wes Barkley, they defeat the Cash's King combination of Chuck Stone, Elijah Dean, Eric Taylor, and Zach Nystrom. The finish of this one is PME hitting Sunset Dreams onto Elijah Dean and getting the 1-2-3 for their team. And then the main event of the show, we had a steel cage match where Isaiah Broner defeats the Duke. This one was wild. The Duke got around in there better than I expected him to, by the way. Actually impressed me quite a bit. Broner, of course, you know, needed to get the win here because this was for the number one contendership. For Chuck Stone's AIW Absolute Championship with a title at Absolution, their big upcoming event on the line here. This was all set up by the previous AIW show that we covered a little while back, where the Duke wins the Rumble and Chuck Stone had won the championship from Broner. And they basically were trying to set up a situation where the Duke and Chuck Stone could basically finger poke of doom their way to the championship at Absolution. But Broner now wins the number one contendership in this cage match. Pretty much the AIW locker room comes out and is brawling and stuff around the cage. Mikey Montgomery, as I mentioned earlier, he came out during this and did a nice move off the cage to kind of take everyone out on the outside. The finish here was an F5 through an open chair by Broner to the Duke to get the 1-2-3. After the match, Wes Barkley gets a microphone. He's in the ring with PME and Broner, and Barkley starts hyping up the next Absolution show, basically saying, we need 1,000 fans in the building for this thing. And at this show, what you can expect is Wes Barkley winning the Intense Championship, PME winning the Tag Team Championships, and Isaiah Broner winning back the AEW Absolute Championship. So great setup for Absolution on this show, and great show overall. The only thing that I didn't mention was at some point during the show, between the four-way and the eight-man tag, there was a match between Alec Price and Sam Holloway, but the Triller TV feed literally went out during the match, so I have no idea who won. But shout out to both of them. Obviously, I'm a fan of both those guys, so but wish I would have known who won, and I just don't know because it cut off, and I don't see the results anywhere online. But once again, that is AEW Shook Ones. It's available over on Triller TV Plus. Speaking of Triller TV Plus, another set of results we got here is Revolver Cage of Horrors. This is technically Cage of Horrors 3. This is from yesterday on Triller TV Plus. It took place in the Horizon Event Center in Clive, Iowa, and these are the results. Show started off with Jake Something with Havoc in their corner over Crash Jackson. Havoc gets on the ring apron, tries to get involved. Something hits Jackson with Into the Void, his version of the Black Hole Slam, for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Marina Shafir over Fulton. Shafir gets the submission win, technical submission. She locks in Mother's Milk, and Fulton tries to get to the ropes and can't make it. Passes out to the hold. The referee has to stop it. So technical submission due to Mother's Milk. We have Marina Shafir over Fulton. After that, we have the crew, the team of Matthew Palmer and Rich Swann with Alex Shelley on the outside. They defeat the team of Ace Austin and Jake Crist, who had Bobby Olsen and Gia Miller in their corner. The finish of this one was Alex Shelley pulling the referee out of the ring right when it looked like the crew was about to get the win. And after this happens, Palmer hits a nice alley-oop right onto Crist. Hits the alley-oop onto Crist, but onto the top of the body of Ace Austin, if that makes sense. So it was like an alley-oop to Crist by Palmer, lands right on top of Ace Austin. And then Rich Swann comes off the top rope with a frog splash onto Austin and pins Ace Austin 1-2-3 for the crew to get the win. After that, we had the PWR Tag Team titles on the line. Good Lucha Things, the team of Lince Dorado and Sam Maria del Sol, they defend and retain their titles over Bang and Matthews, the team of August Matthews and Davey Bang, the former Bang Bros. I love the name of this tag team, by the way. If you don't get the reference, Good Lucha Things is a reference of Sam Maria del Sol is the former Kalisto from the WWE, and the two of them were in Lucha House Party together, Lince and Sam Maria. But there was a really famous promo from years ago that was so bad, where Kalisto doesn't know what to say on the microphone, and he says he's going to do Good Lucha Things in his match. So I like the lore here and the fact that they use that joke as their tag team. There was a little dissension within the team as well, it looks like, throughout this one, too, with Sam Ray and Lince kind of having different opinions on like the ways to go about getting the wins. But nonetheless, they do get the W here and retain their titles. The finish of this one was Lince hitting a shooting star press off the top onto Matthews for the 3 count. After that, we had a Frat House Rules match where Red, the team of Alex Colon and Steve Macklin, along with Killer Kelly on the outside, they defeat Alpha Sigma Sigma, ASS, the team of Brent Oakley and The Pledge, who had Casey Jacobs on the outside. The finish of this one was The Pledge turning heel and dick kicking Oakley, leading to a top rope splash and top rope elbow drop at the same time through a door bridge by Macklin and by Alex Colon. So Colon and Macklin both off the top rope through a door bridge to Brett Oakley after the pledge has turned on him. And yeah, this was a great finish. The pledge turning there, leaving Alpha Sigma Sigma, and presumably I would assume, you know, linking up with Red, but even if he doesn't, we'll get the pledge versus ASS in the future. After that, we had the PWR remix title on the line. Gringo Loco defends and retains over Leo Rush and Myron Reed. I'll do my best to explain the finish here. It's a little confusing, but basically what winds up happening is Leo Rush is doing his whole Blackheart gimmick, and he's been drinking out of a like this black liquid out of a Blackheart, and Myron Reed winds up grabbing it for himself, and when he drinks it, he just passes out completely, like he's dead in the middle of the ring. After this happens, Leo Rush is going for a stunner onto Reed, but Gringo hits a Cody cutter from the top rope onto Leo to take him out of the match. And then Gringo just pulls Myron Reed's body into the middle of the ring and pins him, because Myron has poisoned himself with the Black Heart. Gringo retains there. After that, we had Danhausen versus Paul Walter Hauser, who is an actor who we've talked about quite a bit on this show. He's been getting a lot more involved in indie wrestling lately. And he's gained a lot of my respect as well, throughout as well. I like the guy a lot. And he has a lot of respect for wrestling. This one goes to a no contest when Damian Chambers comes in and attacks both guys. This leads to a three-way match where Dan... Well, I guess technically this was technically a handicap match, I believe. But maybe... It was Danhausen and Paul Walter Hauser. They defeat Damian Chambers. We'll just call it a handicap match. It happened right away, and there was only like a minute long. The finish of that one was Danhausen curses. Oh, well, so I forgot to mention in the no contest, to make the no contest happen before Chambers interferes, Kayla Cassidy gets on the ring apron for the distraction. So in this next match that happens impromptu, Danhausen curses Chambers, and then Kayla Cassidy accidentally punches Chambers in the dick due to the curse, and then Hauser hits a crane kick onto Chambers, followed up by Danhausen putting the teeth in Chambers' mouth and kicking him in the head, and then Hauser hits this nice kind of like flatliner variation for the three count. After that, we had the Revolver title on the line. Ace Austin wins the championship, becomes the new champion, by defeating Alex Shelley. Gia Miller was on the outside for Ace Austin. Shelley had Matthew Palmer and Rich Swann in his corner. The finish here was Palmer gets in the ring and accidentally hits Rich Swann with the title belt as they're trying to attack Ace Austin together. Both Palmer and Swann get hit by the fold, one after another by Ace Austin's finishing move. And this leads to Alex Shelley actually hitting Ace Austin head with the title, but there's no ref in the ring to do the count. As this is all kind of happening, Ace Austin hits a backwards dick kick to even the odds. So low blows Alex Shelley, and then hits him with the fold, pins him 1-2-3. Ace Austin, once again, your new Revolver champion. And the main event of the show, in Cage of Horrors, we had Mance Warner defeating Manders and Matthew Justice in a battle of former SGC brothers. Manders and Justice still technically part of the group together. We don't really see Justice in GCW much lately, though. And Warner, of course, doing his own thing as GCW champion and feuding with the rest of the SGC, especially with Effie, which we've covered extensively here and on the Spotlight. The finish of this one was Justice hitting a stage dive off of a scaffold through a bunch of, basically under the top of Manders, who was laying across a bunch of broken doors. As he's trying to get the pin, Mance Warner hits a running knee to Justice, and then he lights a bunch of these broken doors on fire and hits a choke slam onto Manders, onto the flaming doors. 1-2-3. Mance Warner wins Cage of Horrors. Moving on, got results for MLW. By the way, I will not have time to do I will do Ring of Honor spoilers, but I won't have time to do Forbidden Door. So we will wait until next week to do Forbidden Door. We have MLW Anniversary 24. These results are from a show that was taped on the first of this month, but aired yesterday, It's available on YouTube. The show is from Center Stage in Atlanta, Georgia, one of my favorite venues in the entire world. Once again, this is MLW Major League Wrestling Anniversary 24. These are the results. We had Bobby Fish over Adam Priest in a short match. And this is where I'm mentioning with Adam Priest, it's like, more looks on MLW. Where's he going, you know? Bobby Fish gets the win with an exploder suplex into the corner for the three count. After that, we had an Opera Cup first round match. Davey Boy Smith Jr. defeats Timothy Thatcher. Gets the win with a sit-out powerbomb for the pinfall victory. After that, we had the MLW National Openweight title on the line. Bad Dude Tito, along with Jesus Rodriguez and Selena De La Renta. He defeats Jake Crist. The finish of this one, there was a nice sequence actually during this match I wanted to point out where Crist goes for like a crossbody from the second rope and Tito catches him and then basically hits him with like an end of days for a near fall. That was a good one. At the end of the match, BRG, Brett Ryan Gosselin, comes out and interferes. He bounces Crist's head off the top rope, which leads to Bad Dude hitting a clothesline, followed up by his tequila screwdriver, the Steiner screwdriver, one of my favorite moves in wrestling history, and gets the 1-2-3. This also snaps Jake Crist's unbeaten streak in MLW. After that, we had Akira over Ikuro Kwan. This was a first-round Opera Cup match as well. Akira gets the win with a death penalty for the 1-2-3. After that, we have the MLW World Middleweight title on the line. Mystico defends and retains over Star Jr. Gets the win via submission with a tap-out after La Mystica. After that, we had a three-way match where Mio Yamashita defeats Danny Jordan and Jazzy Yang. It was cool because Jimmy Yang, who is the father of Jazzy Yang, was in the crowd for this one as well. This is Jazzy's MLW debut. Jimmy Yang, one of my favorite WCW cruiserweights from back in the day, and also had a pretty good WWE run, at least in my opinion. I was always a fan of guys like Jimmy Wang Yang, even when he's a part of that group with that Yakuza type group where it was like him and I think it was called Akira at the time. Anyways, I was always a fan of Jimmy Wang Yang. Yang Time was such a sick move back in the day. The finish of this one was Yamashita hitting Danny Jordan with a DVD into kind of like a Falcon Arrow for the 1-2-3. And the main event of the show, in a bull rope match, we had Mads Cruel Kruger defeating one called Manders. The finish here was Jinai Kai coming out and hitting a head kick to Manders, which led to Kruger hitting Scorched Earth for the 1-2-3. After the match, Contra attacks. A ton of people in all black come out and they attack Manders. They put Manders' head in a bucket. They strangle him with a bull rope. Backstage, Matthew Justice tries to fight people off and help out, but it's just too much. Guys like Minoru Suzuki and Kwan come out and come backstage, and they take out Justice too. So Contra just runs roughshod over MLW to end the show once again. And I mean, it looks like all signs are pointing to Matt Riddle being the next MLW champion based on, you know, the booking and where we're at and everything right now. But I mean, if Cruel doesn't win the title, I don't know what you do with the guy unless he has his own kind of Cruel-averse, you know, on the side, because the guy is so OP at this point. He just overpowers everything on every show he's a part of. And I like him because I'm a fan of his. I think the dude can work his ass off. I've sung his praises for years. I'm a Cruel fan. I don't want this to sound like I'm against him getting these pushes. It's just, you put him at this point in IWTV, in that whole world with that title, where like I don't buy anybody beating him anytime soon. And an MLW is feeling pretty much the same right now, too. So how long before he gets a title shot there as well? You know what I mean? Once again, that's MLW Anniversary, available for free on YouTube. Moving on, got some quick results for NXT Level Up. This show took place, well, I should say this show aired on June 21st. And I watched it on Hulu, so that's where I recommend checking the show out. We had three matches and an interview segment, par for the course, for Level Up, as per usual. And these are the results. Started off with a tag team match where Tyson DuPont and Tyreek Egwe defeat Cutler James and Dion Lennox. The finish of this one was a tag team belly to back and jumping choke slam, almost like a jumping Kobe, for the 1-2-3. After the match, all four guys shake hands. After that, we had a quick interview segment where Shiloh Hill talks about how wrestling isn't about all the time that you've had in wrestling, it's about your heart. But he's also a smart guy, graduated with a 4.0 GPA, and he made his debut on Level Up last week in a tag team match This is his singles debut against Uriah Connors, which is this next match we're about to talk about, where Shiloh Hill actually defeats Uriah Connors. The finish here was like a pump handle DVD. It's a move that I've seen other people use, and I just can't put my finger on who else I've seen do it. Maybe like Vikingo or something. I know I've seen other people use this move, but it's like a pump handle slam into a death, into like a spinning Death Valley driver for the three count. And it does that's a big win because Uriah Connors, of course, fourth generation, the son of Fit Finlay, the former Brogan Finlay on the Indies. But both guys who have a very long, bright future ahead of themselves in the WWE system. I think Shiloh Hill is going to do great in this system. And the main event of the show, we had Carmen Petrovic over Ren Sinclair. The finish of this one was basically like a trouble in paradise to the lower back of Sinclair when she was kind of based on all fours trying to get up for the 1-2-3. So solid episode of NXT Level Up. Three good matches and a lot of star power here. You can tell that Petrovic eventually on like the regular NXT show and probably Raw or SmackDown will probably have a bright future in the company. Same with Sinclair, but you can tell that Petrovic's a little farther along as far as like potential push. Connors is going to be a made man there unless something crazy happens given his family and his talent and his age and stuff. Like, he's good to go. Shiloh Hill, I've been really pleasantly surprised about. I honestly think he's going to do great. And I love everybody involved in that opening tag team match. And I think the team of DuPont and Iwe especially have a bright future together. Cutler and Lennox will figure it out as well. They're doing great work. All right. Last, we're going to do some spoilers for Ring of Honor. So spoiler alert. If you don't want Ring of Honor spoilers, just go ahead and turn the show off right now. I'm putting the timestamps in the description right now. So you might even hear the typing. That'll be a little Easter egg for you guys. I don't know how much my microphone's noise cancellation is working. So you may have heard the types there as well, the typing for the timestamp. This is me stalling to get to that timestamp so that people don't accidentally hear the spoilers. So spoiler alert. We have Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers coming right now. These were from June 20th. These are courtesy of Kate from Fightful. So thank you very much for these, Kate. These are from Allentown, Pennsylvania, and they're going to be airing on upcoming episodes of Ring of Honor Television. I do not have the spoilers from last night, if there were any, from the Collision tapings for AEW for Ring of Honor. They may just not be out yet, or they might not have done them. I don't know. But these are all the spoilers I have up to this point, and they are as follows. We have the Bang Bang Gang, the team of Austin Gunn, Colton Gunn, and Juice Robinson, over the Dark Order team of Alex Reynolds, Evil Uno, and John Silver. We have an ROH World title match where Mark Briscoe defeats Kyle Fletcher to retain the title. That's interesting because Kyle Fletcher is the TV champion, so I'm not sure why they're doing that. We have the ROH Pure Title Proving Ground match where maybe Fletcher won a Proving Ground match or something I didn't know about, which is possible. I don't know. I don't want to be too harsh on that. I like Kyle Fletcher. I think that's probably a great match the two of them had. It's just confusing because he's already the TV champion, you know what I mean? We had a ROH Pure Title Proving Ground match after that, which is what prompted me to think of that because we had Lee Moriarty and Wheeler Yuta. Wheeler Yuta, of course, the champion going into this. This went to a time limit draw, meaning that Moriarty is going to be getting a shot in the near future for the ROH Pure Title, which I'm very much looking forward to another Pure Title match between Yuta and Moriarty, two of the best technical wrestlers in the entire world, in my opinion. And what looks like probably the main event of the tapings, we have the ROH World Tag Team Titles in a Proving Ground match. So not on the line, once again, a Proving Ground match. We have the ROH Tag Team Champions, which is the Undisputed Kingdom, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, the champions. They defeat Commander and Metalik, who had Alex Abrahantes on the outside. Metalik and Commander, it's cool seeing them team more often. I'm a fan of both of those guys a lot, especially Metalik. I like Commander's innovativeness, if that's even a real word, and stuff like that. But I've always felt like Metalik, even from like the Cruiserweight Classic days of the WWE, I feel like he's been like underutilized. I've always been a big fan of his work. And Taven and Bennett, you know, I think they do their best work together as a tag team. I just can't get behind the Undisputed Kingdom thing. It's just so dead in the water to me, but that's another topic for another time. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Please hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com. Please follow me on X at FightTalk_. Use code FightTalk and IndependentWrestling.tv. And watch the Spotlight every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time with myself and Jeremy Lambert. We talk the world of pro wrestling, and we have interviews for y'all as well. If you want to go back and check out the interview from last week, We had Sam Stackhouse on the show, who had a massive GCW weekend last weekend. So if you want to know more about Sam Stackhouse, check out the interview with myself and Jeremy Lambert. Once again, it's available on the main Fightful YouTube channel. And we plan to have a guest for you this week as well. We'll get that locked down for you soon. We will advertise it, and y'all can check that out on Thursday. So once again, the spotlight every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, youtube.com/Fightful. Once again, I've been Steven Jensen. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.